What's next for Duval County's public schools? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. And just ahead, a conversation with Duval County Public School Board Chair Warren Jones. Already getting calls for him. You can join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, Culpepper with a recap of last night's Super Bowl. Did you watch? That's later. But first this morning, educators say they're confident they can get a measure before local voters this fall that could help pay for some badly needed school repair and construction projects across Duval County. It's the latest push for a half-cent sales tax referendum for local schools, and the school board recently won a round in court. Warren Jones is chair of the Duval County Public School Board, and he's here now in studio. Chair Jones, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
We're already getting calls for Warren Jones, who used to serve on the city council as well. Give us a call right now. What are your questions about the sales tax push and other education topics that we'll get into here on the show? The number to join us is 549-2937. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. Okay, a couple of weeks ago, you won a round in court. A local judge ruled that the school board has the right to hire its own attorneys to sue the city. This is a part of your long-running battle against the city of Jax to get this half-cent sales tax referendum on the ballot this fall. Can you bring us up to date on where you go from here?
Well, thank you for inviting me here today. Yes, we did win. The judge did rule in this instance that the school board could hire outside counsel to litigate the issue of whether or not we can go forward with the word shall. The general counsel interpreted shall to mean maybe. Our understanding statewide is that the word shall means the county commission, in this case the city council, would put it on the ballot. We make the decisions as to what happens to the schools, which schools are closed, which ones are renovated, which ones are built. That's a school board function and not a city council function.
In other words, the language in the statute says that the city leaders, the city council, have to put this referendum on the ballot.
Right. They can select.
If you, the school board, say it's necessary.
Correct. They can select the date in cooperation with the school board, but they have to put it on the ballot. They can't get into the weeds and how many schools are going to be closed, where they're going to be located when build new schools. But unfortunately, there were some powers to be who feel like that they know best for what's good for public schools that held it up.
And who, and when you say powers that be, who are you talking about?
A lot of individuals who are vested in charter schools, who want to see more of those dollars directed to their particular financial interest, and they have lined up support on the city council to defer it. And you heard it over and over again that several council members publicly said, I'm not voting for anything until I find out how much money is going to charter schools. Well, for the first time, the school board and the superintendent was in lockstep that we need to address our needs. And Duval County has the oldest schools in the state of Florida. We have more schools that are 50 years old or older than any other district in the state of Florida. So we're directing those dollars where needed, not based on how many students you serve, but based on the need of the facility that you serve the students in. And those dollars are not going to privately owned buildings because the charter schools are leasing or renting space in privately owned buildings. So if that charter school closes or that lease expires, then the district cannot recoup those taxpayer dollars as we could with a publicly owned building.
We'll go to your calls in a moment for Warren Jones, chair of the Duval County School Board, 549-2937. So you're confident you can get this referendum before voters this November, coinciding with the presidential election. Voters can decide whether or not to approve it if it gets to the ballot. This proposed half-cent sales tax would run 15 years and raise more than $1 billion. People can go to your website, duvalschools.org, to look at the master plan of how you would spend this money in needed improvements and a timeline. 75% of Duval County registered voters told a UNF pollster they support this sales tax. But as you said, Chairman Jones, The rub comes in how much of this money could be apportioned toward charter schools. That's been the controversy from the start. Now, let me get your thoughts about a bill moving through Tallahassee right now. It would require school districts like Duval's to share money with charters on a per pupil basis. There's a tweet here from a listener asking, if your referendum goes through, will you fight this legislation in court, this legislation that is likely to pass in Tallahassee?
Well, that would be a statewide fight. It wouldn't just be Duval County. And hopefully the Florida School Board Association, which represents all 67 counties in the state of Florida, would engage in that. And we probably would participate in that effort.
And what would you say to parents or teachers listening right now who like the idea of these tax dollars being shared on a per pupil basis with charter schools? That's what they would prefer to see.
Well, when it comes to sales tax, we're talking about privately owned buildings. We're not talking about teacher salaries. We share, if we pass a millage increase, then by right, those dollars which are for operations, for teachers' pay, those would go to charter schools. We share those on a per pupil basis. But sales tax, we should not, because the building is not owned by the nonprofit. It's owned by a private entity. Do we want to take your taxpayer dollars, improve some privately held property, and then that property, that lease with the charter school ends or the charter school closes, we cannot, as taxpayers, as responsible elected officials, we cannot recapture that investment.
Okay, let me ask you about another matter. State Representative Jason Fisher, who used to serve on the Duval County School Board, has introduced legislation in Tallahassee that could change the superintendent position in Jacksonville from an appointed one to an elected post. House Bill 79 calls for a local Duval County resident to stand and run for the position of superintendent. And there are some elected superintendents throughout Florida, although none in large urban school districts like right. Duval. Only two states, Alabama and Florida, even allow for an elected superintendent. That said, what's your response to voters out there who say they'd like the opportunity to choose the superintendent?
Well, we've taken a very strong position unanimously in opposition to having an elected superintendent. We had that back in the 60s. For the first time during that period of time, the school district became disaccredited. We are now accredited. We have been for over 50 years. When we did a national search for a superintendent, we wanted to pick the best person for our students. If you have an elected superintendent, it would have to be somebody who resides in Duval County. Of the 27 people who were eligible to apply for the superintendent job nationwide, only one resided in Duval County, and that one person did not even get to be interviewed because we picked the top six, and none of those six lived in Duval County. So if you're going to, just like with a football team, if you're going to hire a coach, you're not going to limit that search to just people who live in Duval County. And we want to make sure that when we have students who are competing on a global market, we want to have the best educator that we can find to run this school district, and not someone who wants to win the next election, who may be more popular, may have more money. But the same forces that want to have sales tax share are the ones behind this elected superintendent. It's about controlling those dollars, and that's unfortunate.
And so you see all of this in the context of a battle in this county, and really it's what we're seeing across Florida and even the nation, a battle over how these tax dollars are controlled and how we look at public education in general.
Correct. And the superintendent proposed to spend around $17 million with charter schools, even though they're not owned by the taxpayers. And that was not acceptable. They saw the number of dollars that the sales tax would generate. The superintendent was very conservative in her estimate of $80 million a year. And they saw where it's going to generate more than that. Well, unlike Clay, St. John's, and Nassau counties, we don't have impact fees. Impact fees can be used only to build new schools or expand schools for growth. We don't have impact fees. We don't have a sales tax to pay for our infrastructure, our current schools. How do you maintain 50-year-old schools when all you're doing is patching an AC unit or patching a roof when it needs to be replaced. And we have some schools that were built during the Spanish-American War. So those are old schools, and we need to replace them.
Some close to 100 years old, schools with not regularly working air conditioning. That's right. One really flagrant example of the issues that we're seeing. Just crumbling school, old school buildings. And so, and lots of kids in portables, lots of kids going to school in windowless rooms. There are a lot of issues like that. And so let's go to your calls now for Warren Jones. He's chair of the Duval County School Board. What are your thoughts about the half-cent sales tax push by the school board? They are trying to get this before the voters by the fall. We'll see if the courts rule their way or not. 549-2937. Susan is in Mandarin. Hi, Susan. Good morning.
Hi. I was wondering, what does Warren Jones think about all the preemption bills? Y'all have already mentioned a couple of them, SB 62, and also there's a new one that's going to impact fees, maybe making it harder to pass impact fees. So I was wondering what Warren Jones thinks about all the preemption bills being suggested by some in the state legislators, and does he think it will motivate voters who don't like legislators doing that? I read this quote in an Orlando Sentinel article. Last year, public school supporters screamed as some legislators pumped up the dollars for charter and voucher schools where accountability is slim, while shortchanging schools that 9% of Florida students attend. What we have to do is get more voters motivated to vote for people that don't like these preemption bills, because I think some of the people in our state legislators and our state legislature is really hurting our local cities. And I was wondering, Warren Jones, just comment on that. Thank you.
All right, Susan, thank you for that.
Yes, I agree that local control is the best control when it comes to public education. Certainly there's oversight, and because the state does fund public education, they have a voice in that, and we just have to be conscious and informed on the person that we elect to make sure they're representing our interests and not those of special interests. And that's been historically true for decades now.
549-2937. Andy is in Jacksonville. Andy, go ahead.
Good morning. One solution would be to get more school board members and more legislators who think like Warren Jones. I'm chair of his fan club.
Okay, we're having a little trouble hearing you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Okay, well, one of the objections I have to the mayor is he tried to shake down the school board and say that to pass the sales tax, you have to hire cronies of the mayor to be your lobbyist, and that's a really, I've never heard of anything like that in my life. That's just a terrible, openly brutal and openly corrupt thing to do.
Okay, let's talk about that. He's referring to a former top staffer for the mayor, Sam Moussa, was accused of, as the caller said, shaking down the Duval County School Board, offering his consulting services in effect to make the referendum go your way.
Right.
To be clear, nobody's been charged with anything. It was controversial. No one has been accused of breaking any laws. But what's your response to that caller?
Well, certainly there's concern anytime a bill is held up. That's good for the public, good for our children, because they want us to hire a certain individual. And if that's the case, then that should not happen, and I don't think the school board would have gone along with that. I mean, you have to do a request for proposal to hire consultants, and we would have had to do that. And that does not mean that person would not have gotten it, but we would have done our best to get the best person for the job.
Did you find that whole chain of events, as critics have charged it, to be an example of corruption and cronyism in Duval County, in Duval County government?
Certainly cronyism was a part of that. And I can't speak to corruption issue. I don't know whether it meets the threshold for corruption, but certainly if that was the case and if they could guarantee that it would pass, then we're hurting our, what we forget about, we're hurting our children, and that's wrong.
Let's go to some tweets and Facebook comments. Here is a comment on Facebook from Tom. If charter schools want to compete with traditional public schools, they need to meet the same minimal standards. And he's talking about curriculum and education standards, not the physical buildings.
Right.
What about that?
Well, the legislature gives them more flexibility than the traditional public schools in curriculum and how they move student achievement. And I think when you look around Duval County, it's probably around the nation, most of the charter schools are performing as well as the schools around them. They're not outperforming those schools. So a charter school that's an A charter school, if you look around the public schools, traditional public schools in that neighborhood, they're also A schools. When you look at the charter schools that are struggling, that the D and F and C charter schools, the schools around them are D and C schools.
And what do you say to folks out there, parents especially, who like the idea of having more choices? The national school choice movement has been particularly strong here in Florida.
Well, that's true, and we provide choice. We had a choice expo last month. The charter schools participate in there. They are visible. They're active. They're promoting their various programs, and that's something that the traditional public school has not done before. We have not competed with charter schools, and we're beginning to you see the ads, we have that. And so we're showing the public now that we can compete, and we have very good programs. We have some of the best schools in the country, and we will continue to move forward. We are 4 points away from being an A school district in spite of the many challenges that we have, unlike St. John's County and some of the other bedroom communities. They don't have the poverty rate and the homeless rate that we have here. We have a number of students, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 students that are homeless, students that don't have a home to go to. So those are many challenges that we face in an urban school district that you wouldn't face in a bedroom community.
Here's a tweet from Teresa. I don't understand how these folks want an elected superintendent and don't realize that you are limiting the talent pool. When it's an elected person, you can only choose from Duval candidates. That disqualifies any great talent from across the U.S. That's the argument you're making, and essentially.
Right. And only two states in the country even allow for elected superintendents, Alabama and Florida. And when you look at the 67 counties in the state of Florida, the 13 lowest performing districts in the state of Florida all have elected superintendents. None of the big seven have elected, all are appointed.
Here's another tweet. Gary Chartrand has funded the battle against the sales tax referendum. He also contributed to Warren Jones for your campaign for school board.
Correct.
This person asks, has there been any pressure from Chartrand on Jones or other board members? Gary Chartrand, of course, is a well-known charter school advocate and has funded school board campaigns, has funded the KIPP school, which is a popular charter school in the city. And so what about that question?
Well, as I remind anybody who runs for office, is that people will contribute to your campaign, but you have to do what you think is best and right for your constituents. And I still stand by that. If I don't get support from Mr. Chartrand or anyone else in the business community because of my advocacy for children and the need to do what's right by our kids and address some of the issues, longstanding neglected issues in Duval County, then I stand by that, and that's what we are charged to do. We are charged to do what's right and not to cave in, as many of the city council did, because that's where a lot of money went to. And so they caved into that pressure, and the school board has not.
So you have faced pressure.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of pressure?
There were calls made after Dr. Vitti left that we postponed.
The prior superintendent.
Right.
Yeah.
That we postponed the selection of the new superintendent, hoping that that same group who are advocating for more money for charter schools could elect people to the school board that would help pick their person. So when you look at the race that Liz Anderson ran in the Beaches, they spent, that same group who want to control the district, they spent $77,000 of hard dollars trying to get someone elected, and Liz still won. You look at the Artiga area where Charlotte Joyce won, they spent $109,000 trying to get that person elected, and Charlotte still won. So thankfully.
But is that pressure? I'm just trying to be specific about my question.
Okay.
I mean, them funding other candidates, that's not the same thing as leaning on someone, pressuring them, threatening, you know, those kinds of things.
Well,
have you dealt with that?
I haven't personally. I mean, I've gotten calls about, you know, why don't you do this? And I just tell them point blank that that's not good for the taxpayers, not good for our children. If we delay the selection of the next school board, I mean, next superintendent, what does that do for the district? That's 2.5 years. We got to have an interim superintendent. We need to move forward. So we've made a lot of progress in this county because we've had an appointed superintendent, and I would not change that position.
Here is an email from Jennifer. I'm opposed to any increase in the sales tax. Sales taxes are regressive taxes, and they disproportionately impact the poor. I am also opposed to state funding for charter schools. Okay. Is the sales tax a regressive tax?
It is, and I've acknowledged that. But in saying that, I would say that when given choices, I thought the sales tax was a better choice. One, because food and medicines are exempt from the sales tax. Two, roughly 30%, when the voters first approved the first sales tax increase to remove the tolls, it was noted that about 30% of that sales tax was paid by people outside of Duval County. So even though it is a regressive tax, food and medicine are exempt, and roughly 30 to 40% of that is paid from folks who shop in Duval County, and so the taxpayers, local taxpayers, don't share as much of that burden.
And to be clear, you're going this route because you don't have other options available. Can you explain that a little bit
that's
more?
That's a very good question. Unlike the city council, when property values increase or new construction comes online, they can keep the millage rate where it is and generate the same additional dollars. School board has to, all school districts throughout the state of Florida have what they call a required local effort, where we have to roll back the millage to generate roughly the amount of money we got the year before. So with almost two-thirds of our millage increase, millage dollars, we have to roll back the cost of that. And so that's where we have to, like many other, I think 39 other counties in the state of Florida have additional revenue stream, either impact fees or sales tax.
Here's an email from Ricardo. According to the Times Union, Jason Fisher's bill was drafted by the city's Office of General Counsel. Is this just another attack by the mayor? The Tallahassee Mafia, he says, is at work taking away home rule, little by little stripping away local representative democracy for the benefit of big money. Strong rhetoric from that listener. Your response?
Don't know who drafted it. I'm not sure. I wouldn't be surprised if they did draft it. But nevertheless, the main concern we have is having local control. The city, the school board, by a voter, the school board can put that on the ballot without a Tallahassee telling us to do so.
Okay. And if you're just tuning in, lots of calls for Warren Jones, the chair of the Duval County School Board. Join us, 549-2937. Jack is at the beaches. Hi, Jack. Good morning.
Hi, I just wanted to say a quick thanks to Chair Warren and the rest of the school board and Dr. Green for all their work. Mom's doing out here at Fletcher, and we appreciate the work, especially when this past Thursday we had, you know, I was just about 5-6 yards away from a power box that was on fire, and we had to run almost for our lives, it felt like, at some point. I just wanted to ask you very quickly on a separate note, what are your thoughts about the news articles that have been coming out, especially from Central and South Florida, about private schools in Florida receiving state dollars while still discriminating against the members of the LGBT community? Thank you.
Yes. You know, we talked about that on our statewide show, the Florida Roundup, on Friday, Jack, last week. This is an educational controversy all over Florida.
Right.
And I'm curious to get your thoughts about that here, how it affects education here in Duval.
Well, as far as public schools go, it would not. We have an obligation to educate all children, no matter whether...
These are, to be clear, these are private voucher schools who are getting taxpayer funding. So you don't really have oversight over that. But what's your opinion about it?
I think it's wrong. It's not good for inclusion. You're discriminating against a class of folks, and I would not be supportive of it.
Okay, let's go to Tom on the west side. Hey, Tom, you've been holding. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Two things. Now, first was actually the one that posted about meeting the same standards. And actually what I was referring to was the actual physical standards. I understand that they don't have either cafeterias or athletic facilities and don't provide transportation. But my question that I wanted to ask was this. There's been a lot of talk about clawbacks from these charter schools, and I'm just wondering, if the charter school goes belly up, who exactly are we supposed to get the clawback from?
All right, thanks for that question, Chairman Jones.
That's a very good question, one that we've discussed at workshops, trying to find out if we provide additional funding for charter schools, how do we recapture those tax dollars if that charter school closes? And it's very difficult because if there are liens on it, then we would not be in a position to take that building back. And so historically, we have not been, of the charter schools in Duval County that have closed, we were able to go in and get the equipment, the furnishings, but not anything else.
And can you clarify in the last, I don't know, since you've been on the school board or in the last several years, how many charter schools have in this county have closed?
Around two or three have closed in Duval County, and I think there's one pending now that may be closing shortly.
But to be clear and to be fair to the teachers at those schools, as you said, there are charter schools across the county who are performing at expectations in the similarly to the public schools where they're situated.
That's correct.
So parents can choose from a whole range of options. Some of them are A schools, some of them aren't.
Right.
But the
speaker was right. They don't have to provide transportation. Some do, but most don't. The building, they can go into a storefront. We can't, as a public school, we can't do that. We have to have a cafeteria. We have to have...
And you have to be a storm shelter, too. Can you talk about why that is part of the sales tax push? Because public school buildings have to be able to shelter people in the event of a hurricane or a severe weather event.
That's so true. And that cost is borne by the district, not by the city or the state. So if the safety director says we need a hurricane shelter in a certain neighborhood and we're building a new school, we have to expend those extra dollars to make sure it meets all the requirements of a hurricane shelter.
Andre emails the show, clarify that this sales tax is for structure and building improvements rather than operations. That's a key point. And it nullifies the whole argument about per student allocation of funding to charters. As for electing the superintendent, it's a political move to consolidate control, he says. It needs to stay as it is. And by the way, here's a tweet for you from Tony. I'm listening to School Board Chair Warren Jones. He fought hard to make the birth site of James Weldon Johnson and John Rosamond Johnson a city park. It was a disused dirt parking lot back then, but big changes and amenities are coming to lift every voice and sing park. So lots of people know all about your local political career way before you were on the school board.
That's correct. And that was one of the... And we are going to celebrate that this month. That this year is 120th year. And Tony, I'm sure that came from Tony Hill, former state senator. And
no, actually, it's Tony Allegretti who tweeted you that. But
okay,
yes,
Allegretti.
More than one Tony out there following this. Let's go to Mary on the west side. Go ahead, Mary.
I just want to say that I'm understanding so much better this morning because of Warren's time with you, Melissa, as to what the issues are. I mean, it's just common sense the way you speak, Warren, and I really, really appreciate this.
Well, thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's circle back to the beginning of this segment. You won a round in court. You're allowed to have your own lawyers.
Correct.
And continue to litigate this with the city. The next court hearing is when? What's the next step?
The judge has not set a court date for the next step. The next hearing will be whether or not he would take oral arguments on whether or not the city council has the right to legislate or debate whether or not it goes on the ballot, and whether or not it's just a administrative function and they have to put it on the ballot, as most counties, Clay County just did. They can choose the date in cooperation with the district. But keep in mind that with the new state law that became effective January 1st of this year, all referendums now have to be held during the general election. So if we miss out on 2020, our next opportunity won't be until 2022. And so we're spending $500,000 per month just maintaining antiquated, rundown, old air-conditioned units. The schools are safe, they're clean, they're functioning, but when an AC goes out, a heater goes out, we have to repair it as opposed to replace it.
We'll follow it, and we thank you for stopping by.
Thank you.
Warren Jones is chair of the Duval County School Board, and up next, we've got some insight in tonight's Iowa caucuses from contributor Mike Favo, who used to caucus in the Hawkeye State. Are you following that? That's next. We'll be right back.
The Florida Department of Health, making healthy tomorrows possible with the right vaccines today. The protection vaccines provide is universal, defending against disease from infancy through old age. Protection begins at thepowertoprotect.org.
I'm Brendan Rivers. Last year, Governor Ron DeSantis appointed Florida's first ever Chief Resilience Officer to help the state deal with the effects of climate change.
And it involves rising seas. It involves things like coastal erosion.
Chief Resilience Officer Julia Neshawat sat down with me in her first interview in office for the ADAPT podcast. Do you think local governments have responsibility as well to look into emission reductions?
I think everyone has a responsibility.
Hear our whole conversation and meet five local people working on these issues at adaptflorida.org.
Welcome back. Well, the first in the nation Iowa caucuses are happening tonight as the top Democratic candidates for president vie for votes in a unique setup that they do out there. Our regular contributor, Mike Favo, now lives out at the beaches enjoying sunny Florida, but he used to live in Iowa. Here's his take and memories of all the caucus action.
About a week before the Iowa caucuses, a random acquaintance will remark, "Hey, Mike, didn't you used to live in Iowa? Did you ever go to the caucuses?" I rarely get to answer their question because the grousing and opining spews forth immediately. Then come the questions of curiosity. What is it like at a caucus? Why do we let a bunch of people in Iowa decide who the candidates for president should be? And the caucus itself, what is it like? Well, I've had the full tilt experience, and I do recommend it to everyone. My first caucus was in 1988. My coworker John and I were both attending our first. He was a native of Wisconsin, and I grew up in Pittsburgh. We were curious and energetic. An invitation to sit in a room and discuss how to fix the country had a lot of appeal to us 20-somethings. We were also extremely naive about politics and the process. Eventually, in 1988, Vice President Bush became the Republican nominee, and later the president. But that night, all was up for grabs, and the Pat Robertson people were out in force to grab it. We were greeted at sign-in by a statuesque local housewife and one-time beauty pageant competitor in head-to-toe red, white, and blue. She confidently assured us that Pat was the man America needs right now. "I am sure you boys agree," she said as she handed us Robertson buttons. To our relief, the crowd in the meeting room looked no different than the crowd one would find down the hallway for a basketball game in the high school gym. The rules of order were simple. Be respectful, don't talk longer than necessary to make your point, and stick around to move the desks back for tomorrow's school day. At the end of the night, Dole won the state, and Robertson edged out Bush for second place. The vote itself was finished in very short order, followed by a lengthy open discussion regarding party platform. My biggest scare of the evening came when my friend and I were each nominated to be precinct representatives at the county convention. Maybe being young and managers at a respected local factory made us appear qualified. Or maybe it was because we were not wearing Robertson buttons. But thank goodness neither of us garnered the votes to actually be precinct representatives. The 1996 caucus was not much different. Bob Dole was back again, and Pat Robertson had moved away from politics. Everyone present had a chance to say their piece and encourage others to vote with them. This time around, I knew how to dodge a nomination for precinct rep, and the experience was as gratifying and sometimes tedious as it had been 8 years earlier. But all in all, still enjoyable. The Iowa caucus is unique, beautifully American, and wonderfully open and honest. Best of all, there is no hiding behind a Twitter handle at a precinct meeting. I can think of no better way to kick off the primary season. Kudos to Iowa and all of my friends attending this year.
It's Democracy in Action. Thanks, Mike. We'll be right back.
WJCT invites you to join us for an evening with Ari Shapiro on Thursday, April 2nd, award-winning journalist and weekday co-host of All Things Considered, NPR's award-winning afternoon news program, will join WJCT's president and CEO, David McGowan, for an engaging conversation. Visit wjct.org/events for ticket information.
Welcome back. Well, recently the world marked the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, the Nazi concentration camp. This solemn occasion was observed in this country and across the globe, as countries around the world continue to see a disturbing rise in anti-Semitism. Lauren Rickoff is Director of Campaign and Women's Philanthropy with the Jewish Federation and Foundation of Northeast Florida. She's here now with some thoughts about that and the work of the Federation. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being with us. And for years, the Jewish Federation has advocated in this community for the Jewish community and done a lot of really amazing philanthropy. And I wanted to first ask you about the 75th anniversary of the Auschwitz liberation, because we saw a lot of observances take place around the world to mark that and to make sure people don't forget.
It's so important today. We're almost a generation removed, and we have to really be conscious of how we're still telling their stories and giving that message, especially to younger people. It's just very important.
I know. I mean, I saw a recent survey of millennials who nearly half of them didn't really know much about the Holocaust, which was horrifying. So that education is so important. So can you explain how the Jewish Federation and Foundation works to educate and the work that you do in the community?
So we work with our partner agencies throughout the community to help service Northeast Florida, and through two specific programs that we connect with the Holocaust. One through our foundation, where Bar Bat Mitzvah kids can help learn about a story of someone from the Holocaust and honor their memory at their Bar Bat Mitzvah. And then we also help support Holocaust survivors living under the poverty line, supporting them with their basic essential needs.
And there are some in this area, correct?
Yeah, nearly 100.
Nearly 100.
Yes, that we help.
Wow. Now, you also have a security focus because, as I mentioned, anti-Semitism is on the rise across America. And so, unfortunately, more security is often needed at events and services.
Absolutely. So through our partnerships with our agencies who are very secure and have their own security plans, we're working to come up with a community plan so we can all work together and share resources. And, you know, unfortunately, if something should happen in the case of something with security or a natural disaster, we're prepared, we can respond, and we can be there for each other.
So with all of that said, the Federation and Foundation, the Jewish Federation and Foundation, is having a big bash.
Yes.
It's your second annual night out coming up this Thursday. It features a Billy Joel tribute act, the Turnstiles. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, we're very excited.
What's going to be happening?
So we're very excited. Second year for this great community-wide event. Last year, it sold out. And we had a Beatles tribute band. And so this year we're going with Billy Joel. It's a fun night. People can just come, have a good time, hear a message about the Federation, support the Federation through fundraising, but then also sing along, dance, talk to their friends, delicious dessert, open bar. It's a really good night.
Billy Joel's Jewish too. And
yeah.
And so this is really appropriate. And okay, so today is the 3rd. This is coming up on the 6th.
It is.
People need to hurry if they want to grab a ticket because, as you said, this tends to sell out.
It does. And absolutely, if you're interested in attending, you can call Jennifer at 904-224-1401 to make a reservation because it is in a few days.
Or you can go to jewishjacksonville.org.
Yes.
Now, before we let you go, we also need to mention that the Jewish Federation recently underwent a rebranding. Can you explain why?
So we wanted to really tie our focus together with the Federation and our merged partnership with the Jewish Foundation. We are one entity and one organization, so we wanted to make sure everybody understood that we're stronger together. We also wanted to make sure that people understood that we're not just supporting Jacksonville, that our services cover all of Northeast Florida, all of the counties of Northeast Florida.
Sure. So it's Duval, St. John's, Nassau, and Clay counties now.
Yes.
So you're doing work across the region. Now, again, if you're just tuning in, as we talk with Lauren Rickoff with the Jewish Federation and Foundation of Northeast Florida, you can RSVP to their second annual night out. It's coming up this Thursday night at the Jacksonville Marriott. Check out some Billy Joel music. Have a great time and help raise money to support the work of the Federation and everything they do to promote the Jewish community in this city. Again, it's jewishjacksonville.org/events. And that will be a really fun occasion. So thank you so much, Lauren. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me.
Lauren Rickoff is Director of Campaign and Women's Philanthropy with the Jewish Federation and Foundation of Northeast Florida. Okay, a quick break. But up next, did you watch the Super Bowl last night? You know who did, of course. Cole Pepper. He's got a recap and all of the highlights from the big game. That's after this. We'll be right back.
Electro Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
Amelia Island Tourism presents Amelia Concours Week, March 5th through 8th. Car aficionados enjoy the 25th Concours d'Elegance, Bonhams, Gooding & Russo, and Steel Auctions, and more. Details at AmeliaConcoursWeek.com.
Farrah and Farrah, dedicated to representing the injured people in Jacksonville for over 40 years. Learn more at farrahandfarrah.com or 396-5555. Farrah and Farrah's accident attorneys are here for you, here for good.
White House lawyers have scored a major victory in the impeachment trial.
To not allow a witness, a document, no witnesses, no documents in an impeachment trial is a perfidy.
Now it's up to senators to decide whether to acquit or convict President Donald Trump. Join us for special coverage on the 11th day of the Senate impeachment trial from NPR News.
This morning at 11 here on 89.9 WJCT.
In the last 40 years, only one candidate has gone on to win the presidency after losing Iowa and New Hampshire. But these states are older and smaller and whiter than the rest of the country. I'm Todd Zwillick. The starting gun goes off in the race for the White House. Why do we still give Iowa and New Hampshire an early jump? That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon, the best in classic and modern blues, every Monday and Wednesday night at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT.
From the hours of 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., the broadcast of WJCT 89.9 FM will operate at reduced power for scheduled maintenance. Thank you for listening to WJCT 89.9 FM.
Culpepper's Sports Wrap-Up is brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
Welcome back. Well, for the first time in 50 years, the Chiefs are Super Bowl champs.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Culpepper, of course, watched the big game, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I did happen to catch a bit of it. And not just because, you know, it's the Super Bowl, and this is sort of my job, but having grown up in Kansas City,
that's right.
I know how long-suffering Chiefs fans have been. I had a number of text strings going on between college roommates and cousins and siblings. Talking about the game as the game was going on. I finally had to mute the phone a little bit there in the third quarter.
I bet.
But the Chiefs did what they did in their other two playoff games, which has come from double digits down to win. They trailed by 10 points and scored three touchdowns in the fourth quarter to beat the 49ers 31-20. Patrick Mahomes won Super Bowl MVP, although you can make a good case that the running back Damian Williams, who had a touchdown catch and a touchdown run and over 100 yards on the ground, could have won the MVP as well. The last time the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, Super Bowl IV, that was the Super Bowl immediately after, the year after Joe Namath made his guarantee.
Oh, wow.
So you talk about long-suffering, and of course that makes you think about the Jaguars and 25 years without
a Super
Bowl.
How many more years do we have to wait? Yeah.
Let's hope it's not the 50-year gap for the Jaguars, but they've got to get things turned around if they are going to get back into contention. It wasn't all that long ago that the Jaguars and Chiefs were both at the top of the draft. In fact, when the Jaguars drafted Luke Jokel with the second pick, the Chiefs had the top pick and picked Jason Fisher, who wound up being not really a contributor as a tackle, moved inside to guard, but has stayed on the team the whole time and was on the team last night as the Chiefs beat the 49ers for the win. Looking ahead to next season now, the 49ers have been installed by the odds makers as the favorites for next year, so we'll see how it all plays out. They shouldn't have a lot of turnover on their team. The Chiefs could have some turnover. At some point, also Patrick Mahomes, who is the youngest quarterback to ever win both the Super Bowl and the league MVP, he's done that in his first 3 years in the NFL, he's going to be due a big contract, and there's talk that he could potentially be the first $40 million a year quarterback.
Wow.
I don't know how you tie up the cap space for that, but I will tell you this. Mahomes is loved in Kansas City, and I'll share a quick anecdote about him. Yeah, he and his girlfriend were out a couple of weeks ago having pizza at a local Kansas City pizza place. He got up, started walking out, turned at the door and said, "Hey, thanks, everybody. I really appreciate it. This is why I love Kansas City. Nobody bothered us during dinner. You just let us have our dinner. We really appreciate how you treat us, so thank you very much." He walks out, and one by one, as the tables got up to pay, they realized Mahomes had bought pizza for everybody in the place.
Oh, how nice.
So great little touch there.
Speaking of, you said you were on a text chain last night. A bunch of women friends of mine were texting me about the Chiefs, I think it was the quarterback, who looks like a Tyrone Power, the old-timey movie star.
There were lots of female viewers.
They were much more interested in that than anything going on with the game action.
I just don't know why you have to turn him into a piece of meat, Melissa. objectified. No, Jimmy Garoppolo's
objectified by female viewers.
Jimmy Garoppolo's movie star good looks have been well chronicled for the 49ers, but it was Patrick Mahomes with the movie star right arm who got the win for Kansas City. So now here as we look forward, the AFC favorite for next year is going to be the Baltimore Ravens at this point. For the Jaguars, they look ahead to the Combine in Indianapolis later this month. Then they're going to have to decide what they're going to do in terms of Yannick Ngakoue. Will they be able to get a long-term deal with him? I think it's going to be difficult. They're probably going to have to use the franchise tag to keep the young rising defensive end in town. Mm. And then there's free agency in the draft. So here are the three big questions for the Jaguars here this offseason. Number one is, who's going to be the quarterback?
I mean,
a lot of people just assume, well, it's got to be Minshew. It doesn't have to be Minshew. I'm telling you right now, there's going to be a quarterback competition unless the Jaguars can find a trade partner that helps out in terms of the salary cap with Nick Foles. I don't think we saw Nick Foles' best after the injury. Whether the injury was still an issue or whether his confidence was or whatnot, I think you're going to have a quarterback competition. As much as Minshew was a fan favorite, he has not done enough to say he is absolutely the franchise quarterback. So barring a trade, I think we're going to see a quarterback competition in the offseason and maybe on through training camp. Number two, what kind of a difference does Jay Gruden make, the new offensive coordinator hire? What does he do and how does he change the way that the offense looks for the Jaguars? And number three, what kind of other roster changes are we going to see? There are some salary cap pressures for the Jaguars, so some familiar faces potentially like A.J. Boye, Calais Campbell, Marcel Darius, all could be salary cap casualties if the Jaguars can't get new deals done with them.
All right, last but not least, it's the February frenzy, Cole says, before March Madness.
In college basketball for Florida State and Florida, two teams with very different schedules ahead of them. Florida State in the top 10. They take on North Carolina tonight, a struggling North Carolina team. FSU has a chance to be a number one or number two seed if they finish strong in the ACC. Meanwhile, the Gators are trying to get things put together. They have been an up-and-down team, a very young team. Mike White has been frustrated trying to get this team to play with more toughness and consistency. We'll see if they can do it in the month of February. They have a pretty easy schedule. If they win the games they should, the Gators should be in good shape.
All righty. Okay, and I got to ask you before we wrap this up, what did you think of the halftime show?
I liked it.
I thought it was pretty good.
I thought it was. I've seen a lot of comments on social media about people outraged by the scandalousness of it, and I just sit there and think,
why? Because of the stripper pole, the outfits, J-Lo and Shakira
take
had
your pick.
On.
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought it was relatively tame by modern standards, but again, remember these are lip sync performances, so they're basically dance routines. It's not like going to a live concert and seeing. It's just not the way it's going to work in the National Football League. Everything's got to be precise
down
to the moment.
Always good to have you.
Thanks,
Cole. That's our show. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. We'll connect with you then. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.